Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And if you'd like to see the many KPP Wealth Management programs, they're all described for you on investtalk.com, like the Dynamic Growth Program, providing flexible management for optimum returns. It's opportunistic, offers broad diversification, and provides potential bear market protection. To see more, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, February 22nd edition of Invest Talk, and I'm glad you're all with us today for the program. I know it's been a pretty interesting start to the year and for the markets, and we're starting to get that little rally that I was talking about in the markets, and we talked a little bit about that over the weekend at our Wealth Conference, Saturday Morning Wealth Conference in San Jose at the Hyatt House. It was a great conference. I had a great turnout, and many of those attendees said that it was one of the best or the best conference that they've ever been to. So, a lot of great information, and we are going to be repurposing that conference into a webinar like we usually do, but it's going to be abbreviated. It's not quite, we spend 3 hours on Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to noon and answer a lot of questions, and it's very interactive, and it's a much better forum to be in. But we're going to try to get as much of that as possible over to our webinar that hasn't been scheduled yet, but we are looking into when to put that on. So look out for that. It's called Opportunities and Survival and Opportunity in a Volatile Market. That's the name of the conference, and that's what the name of the webinar will be. And it really went into history of the market. What causes a recession? What causes the stock market to really fall dramatically? And there's three main causes. There's central banks and their policies. It's foreign currency fluctuation, major foreign currency fluctuations, and then also government policy. And so we talked a little about the history of that, and then we got into where we are today. What's happening today? Are things positive? Are things negative? And an update on that. And then how do you invest in this market? And there was one chart, which I will include in the webinar, that I think is very, very profound about how you invest. How can you invest today? How should you invest today? And the answer really is it's no longer going to be a market of the high flyers, the names that you hear on CNBC and in the media. It's going to be a very different market than we've seen over the past 6 years or so. And I showed a chart why. And if you were there, you know why. And if you want to know, tune into our webinar coming up that will be scheduled in the next few weeks. So, we're starting out a new week on Invest Talk, and I'm glad you're joining us. And before we take our first question, I want to talk about one of the consequences of the super low interest rate environment. People are looking for income everywhere. They're stretching for yield. We see it all the time. People calling in, what about this stock? What about this investment? Trying to find investments that are yielding more than just a percent or so. And they want portfolios that pay hefty dividends, and that's understandable. And there are a few areas that many investors overlook, being blinded by the promise of an appealing payout. And the most important feature of any company's fundamental profile is their growth rate. If company's not growing, they're usually dying. And it's a lack of growth that plagues many stocks that pay huge dividends. Not only is growth usually stalled, but many times it's likely to turn negative at some point in the near future based on the business cycle or structural issues within the company or position to the industry. And we're seeing that now in the retail industry. There are some companies doing pretty well. Think of the Amazons of the world. There are some companies that are doing so-so because they have good brands. Think of maybe the Nikes of the world. Then there's others, retailers that just they're in the wrong space and they're really getting eaten up by the online retailers. Now, when going back broadly, if you're a long-term holder of a stock, it is much more preferable to own a 3.5% dividend payer with good growth than a 5.5% dividend payer with little to no growth. And this goes back to what we talk about all the time, is that it's not about one thing. When you're investing, it's never about one thing, one factor. It's taking them all in aggregate. Growth, cash flow, dividend, strength of their brand, management, size, balance sheet, etc. Now, a growing company will eventually raise their dividend over time, and that rate of return on your capital will also expand as well. Now, in order to increase a dividend, however, company must have to have the capacity to increase their distribution rate, while at the same time still having money left over to fund operations and continue to grow, whether organically or through acquisitions. Now, in search of stocks with these characteristics, you have to be diligent. You have to look at their balance. You have to look at cash flows. And payout ratio is one of those factors you have to look at. It should be around 60% or less. Doesn't mean you get rid of all ones that are higher, but you scrutinize those a little bit more. Now, mid-cap stocks typically are in the sweet spot area to search for decent dividends with attractive growth. Now, this asset class usually has very good historical returns with less volatility than small caps. Now, in our analysis for our portfolios for our clients, many times we'll start a search for profitable companies between a market cap of, you know, $2 to $10 billion, dividend yields greater than 2%. And then you go even deeper into the fundamental analysis and look for attractive investments for long term. So when you're looking for dividends, you have to understand the risks and the potential growth. Everybody wants dividends. Understandable. When your bank account's yielding nothing, you want yield. If you're a retiree, you want yield. That's why a lot of our retirees are in our balanced income program, because they get that yield. But it's about finding yield that is a good risk-adjusted return bet. Say that. Now, do you have a question about searching for dividends or real estate or growth stocks? Whatever it is, any money matters we want to talk about. So let's hear your comments as well. I want to get a sense of what you think. The market's back. Are we good? Are we good to go? We're going to rally back up to the previous highs. What do you think? We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello. I was calling in to get your opinion on the stock Gilead. Looking to get into it. Wanted to see what your opinion is and what would be a good entry point. Now or wait later. Thank you.
All right. He's looking at Gilead Sciences. And this is a company that a lot of people have fallen in love with. They have a hepatitis C treatment that is very, very effective, very, very effective. And that's a good thing in one sense, and it's a bad thing on another. One is that their revenues are highly tied to this drug. It's very expensive. I think it's $100 a day to be on it. You have to be on it for, I think, 120 days. So it's very, very expensive. And they're getting scrutinized by Congress, just like many drug companies are. for how much they're charging for their drugs. And so that is a huge risk if Congress really starts to crack down on the ability for Gilead and other drug companies to charge whatever they want. Okay, so that's one problem, is Congress potentially cracking down on them. Number two is that's the vast majority of their revenues and earnings is that one drug. I think it's called Solvedad, I think is what it's called. And it's so effective that they're curing everybody. And eventually they're going to run out of patients to treat, which is a worrisome sign. Then what if there's suddenly a study that comes out about problems with the drug? The stock would sink dramatically because they're so tied to this one drug. So this is a very risky drug to be invested in, or company to be invested in the biotech space. They have great numbers, great cash flow. I can't hate on that, but I would not be investing in Gilead at this time. Now, one of the most popular topics on Invest Talk is real estate. Mostly, I'm sure, because so many people have a stake in it. But real estate questions can be very specific, related to every person's individual situation, right? Well, now there's another source of answers for your real estate questions. You can ask me directly. I am a licensed realtor, and I can give you a professional opinion. You get a note to me with your question on investtalk.com. Just click on the Contact Justin button, and I'll get right back to you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call sooner rather than later. I know a lot of people try to rush in at the end of the show and get their call in, but I like to have a little time to do that. So try to get your call in sooner rather than later. Now, do certain funds benefit from presidential elections? Do they benefit? I'm going to talk a little bit about that. What is the election cycle, presidential election cycle? What does it tend to mean for stocks in the economy? Where should you position your portfolio now that we're in the fourth year of the election cycle? I think that'll be interesting to go over. And then I want to talk about a news piece that I think is disturbing to some degree. It's annoying. And part of it's downright stupid. And this is Bank of America and the fact that they're offering 3% down mortgages. Again. Do we not learn, people? Do we not learn? It's crazy. Crazy to me. So we're going to talk about that and what that means and how you should look at that coming back in a positive light in some sense, and I think more in a negative light. But I think it'll be important to discuss about the economy as a whole and the real estate market in general. And then I want to talk about the prediction for TV in the next 10 years. TV has already changed to a significant extent. A lot of cord cutters. A lot of different ways that we can receive that type of information. And I want to highlight those changes that are probably coming down the line and how that might affect certain companies and certain industries, especially that industry. So we're going to talk about that coming up. Now, first I want to quickly get to the market. The Dow is up 229 points. The NASDAQ was up 67. And the S&P was up 28. Really a broad-based rally. Good rally on the day. And this is really the C leg. You know, I talked about the A leg up late January from the January lows. Then you had the B leg at the beginning of February down to retest those lows. And now you're having this C leg that will highly likely peter out at some point in the next week or two. So be aware of that. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and this is InvestTalk. We're here to help you answer all your money questions at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question this hour. We have about 35 minutes left in the show to get your call in. So Do it sooner rather than later. Now, our main talking point is about presidential election cycles. And I'm very happy that we're talking about that this hour because I'm just not a big fan of them. I just don't think it really has any statistical significance. But a lot of people like to talk about it. There's no surefire way to predict exactly where the stock market is going. The direction of prices has much more to do with economic conditions than with timing of a presidential election. Okay, but the presidential election cycle theory first was developed by stock market historian Yale Hirsch. And his theory evolved to be used as a timing indicator for stock investors. But in reality, it's kind of choppy. But let's go over the points. The presumptions are that in the first 2 years of a presidential term, the president exits campaign mode and works hard to fulfill their promises. Okay? Which sometimes they're more socially driven, not necessarily economic driven. And they're okay. They don't need the economy to be going gangbusters because they're not going to try to be elected again for a few years. So the first year or two are typically the weakest 2 years of a presidential cycle. Then you get into year 3 and 4, and the president starts to think about his election campaign coming up, or his party holding on to power. So what does he need to do? He needs the economy to get better. People feel better about things, feel better about what's happening in their lives when the economy is decent. So he is most likely to do things that will strengthen the economy, that will maybe lower taxes, maybe push increasing, I don't want to say welfare, but stimulus for the economy, government spending, etc. So to summarize, the performance from best to worst is the best year is usually the third year, then the fourth year, then the second year and the first year. So the first year is usually the weakest. Well, if you look back recently, that doesn't really apply. For example, the first 2 years of Obama's first getting elected in 2008, the first 3 months wasn't that great, but after that, the first 2 years was fantastic. The fourth year was not the strongest of the four. Now, this term, the first 2 years were great. 2013 and 14, markets were strong. 2015, not so strong. This year, clearly not so strong. So, kind of backwards. You go back to George H.W. Bush. The first year was much stronger than his third and fourth. Bill Clinton had a strong first years in both of his terms. So it actually applied to Bill Clinton. But at the end of the day, I think it's just kind of hokey. I don't think there's enough data to really understand exactly what's going to happen. There's other factors like what's happening with Congress. Did you inherit a recession or not? So I'm just not a big fan of the presidential election cycle prediction mechanism. So I kind of throw it out. Let's go to Russell in Massachusetts. He wants to talk about real estate. How you doing, Russell?
Good, Justin. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. What can I do for you?
So I actually listen to the show, usually via podcast. Good show. Thanks for having it.
Thanks for listening.
I am going to graduate school soon and my parents are planning on helping me by buying an apartment, owning it for 4 years, and then selling it, and then renting it out to other people while I'm living in it.
Okay.
I just didn't know if you had any advice on, thoughts, if that's a good idea, and advice on how to look for such a deal.
Well, it's not a bad idea. This happens a lot. They don't want to pay, parents don't want to pay probably for room and board, right, for those 4 years. So they rather say, well, we're going to make an investment. Where are you going for grad school?
I expect to be going in the Boston area, but I might be going to New York.
Okay. So those are two areas that tend to be on the expensive side but right now. And they are also areas that tend to hold up pretty decent in most economies. So that's a positive. Obviously, which neighborhood, et cetera, that changes. But I think what you have to think about in 4 years is, do you want to be a landlord? Are your parents going to be a landlord? Are you okay with that? Are you going to live in that area? Are you going to hire a management firm? You know, those are the factors that you need to think about. You know, obviously the 4 years going to school, you're going to live there and it's going to have utility for you. But after that is, do you want to be a landlord? And then if you don't, what are the risks that in 4 years you'll be down on the property? So why don't you do this? Go to my website, go to investtalk.com, send me an email and with your number, and I'll call you off air and we'll talk about it a little further and get more detail from you. Okay, Russell?
Okay, sounds good, Justin. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up in the next half hour, how to save money while you're driving. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
For our Southern California subscribers, if you're looking to buy, sell, or invest in real estate, here's a seminar for you. Learn the ins and outs of the 1031 exchange, and InvestTalk's own Justin Klein will dig into the investment side of real estate. You'll see examples, too, of current real estate investments. It's Thursday, February 25th, 5:30 p.m. at J.T. Schmid's Restaurant. That's 2415 Park Avenue in Tustin, California. And again, that's February 25th at J.T. Schmid's in Tustin. We continue with the Monday, February 22nd Invest Talk. Now you can think of KPP Financial as a resource for real estate answers. To get your individual question to us, ask a licensed realtor. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com or call 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the stock Middlebyte. And symbol is MIDD.
Okay.
I own 2 shares. I was thinking of adding more. I want to take your opinion as whether it's a good long-term holding.
This is an interesting one. I've never actually heard of this one. It's a small company, relatively. $5 billion market cap. Middlebyte Corporation. They manufacture commercial cooking, warming, and baking equipment and for residential applications as well. So they obviously are in a somewhat anti-cyclical business, even though they are providing their products to the commercial market. They don't pay a dividend, but their earnings growth is about 11% this year and 19% next year. Good cash flow, return on equity is 21%. You know, what do you like about it? What about this company attract you to get into it?
I think their past performance, and as you said, is cyclical. And I heard their CEO's interview once on Motley Fool, and I think I was impressed with his approach. He's very simplistic and realistic person that I came out. So that's my positive thinking about it.
Gotcha. Well, it certainly is. It certainly is a simple business. You know, they make baking ovens is their main business, and that's a good business to be in. Every restaurant needs ovens. The biggest question is, if we go into a recession, how many less restaurants are going to be opened? Right. I think that's a big question. How many less restaurants are going to be open? And I would say a lot. And so that, I think that's the worry, and that's why the stock has declined from 210 down to, that's why the stock has declined from 125 to 88. So for me, and if I look back into the last recession, right, you had the stock decline from 25 all the way down to, you know, $5-6 a share. So that's a big decline. So I could see something like that. You know, that's an 80% decline. And if that repeated, this would go down into the mid-20s, right? So I think there's probably more downside to go. Now, is this a good company? Yes, it is. They're very profitable. They have a lot of cash flow, strong cash flow, steady grower. Return on equity is in the high teens, around 20% level. Return on assets is around the 10%, 9-10% level, even though that's declining a little bit. So to me, I would say in the near term, there's a lot more risk, but I like the company. I like the company long term. I just think you'll get a much better buying opportunity as this bear market continues. So I would dollar cost average into it, is really what I would do, is allocate a certain percentage of your portfolio to it and break those shares up over time, and especially when the market goes down, maybe get a little heftier into it. So if you have a long-term time horizon, great. If you have a short-term time horizon, I would be a little weary of it.
All right.
Okay?
Good.
Thanks, BJ. Let's go to Daniel in Palo Alto.
Hi, Justin. Just had two quick questions. One, the stock symbols, you may have already answered the question. Is CALM, it's the largest distributor of chicken in the United States?
Yep.
And I wanted your take on that. And also, I'm averaging down on GDX every time there's a dip. I just wondered, speaking of recession, just if you have time to comment on that, but the calm is what I wanted to know about.
I like your strategy on GDX, and I like calm. This is one that we are actually looking at for our clients last year. Didn't get that big boost into it, that big jump into it. And it's pulled back really from the highs of $60 or so. You have a shortage in eggs. They produce eggs. They distribute eggs.
Right.
And
eggs and chicken, yeah.
Yeah, eggs and chicken. And so it's my issue right now is that earnings will decline 31% next year. That's a little bit worrisome. The dividend, I think, is sound. They're growing. So I like the company. I really do. If your time horizon is long term, I have no problem with it. I actually really like it. But if we continue to go down with a recession, you know, I think that this will go down with the market as well. But I think it will buck the trend to some extent, meaning it will outperform the overall indexes. So I'm a fan of Calmain Foods. CALM is the symbol.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for calling. Now, time for Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money issues, choices that can make a difference. Now, we're all about saving money. Now, are you spending too much money getting from point A to point B in your car? Here's what you can do about it. Now, changing the way you drive can significantly increase your gas mileage. These are real things that can save you real money. Now, here are some of the ways to increase your fuel efficiency. One, keep your tires inflated to the manufacturer's recommended level. Low tire pressure requires more energy to move. It means more rubbers touching the road of your tires. So try to make sure you check your tire pressure when it's cold outside. Most effective time to do it. Efficiency increase 3%. So that's the number one thing you can do. Number two, take all the junk out of your car. I know I'm guilty of it from time to time. I accidentally leave stuff in my car. Not accidentally, I just, you know, I'm busy and I have newspapers and things that I maybe read some of it. I want to get to the rest or something, and I leave it in my car. Extra jackets, clothes, whatever it is. But that's obviously more weight. And on average, you can increase your efficiency by 2% by just cleaning out your car. Number three, take off the roof rack. The roof rack creates unneeded wind resistance, clearly, and that's another 2% efficiency. Number four, use your air conditioner only when you really need it. Air conditioners use up a large amount of fuel. I think we all know that. But that's an 8% increase in your efficiency by not using your AC in your car. So I think that's always interesting to see where the little places you can get some savings. What else? Another is don't fill up your gas tank all the way. I don't really like this one. It's only a 1% increase. Kind of a pain to keep refilling your car, but it is true, you know, that first half of your tank is extra weight. And then when it comes to saving on gasoline, think plastic. Many reward cards offer 2, 3, or even 5% back on gas station purchases. That's one reason why I have so many cards. Because usually every quarter, there's one of my cards that's offering 5% back on gas. So I use that card for that quarter. One card, automatically, no matter what, always gives me 3% back. So that's something that to consider as well. Now, obviously, you have to pay them off every month so you don't have any interest charges. But if you're disciplined enough, it's a great way to save on gas as well. So that's Invest Talk Personal, and there's still time to get your question or comments to us before the end of the show. Check in right now, 888-99-CHART, or make it a personal note that will come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Steve or Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Maybe it's time to push the reset button. Start fresh. One of the services we provide to a limited number of our listeners is a free checkup. Steve sets aside dates for these individual retirement reviews each month. The next date is this week. He'll be in San Jose Wednesday, February 24th, then in San Diego County on March 2nd, and then San Ramon, March 9th. These dates are posted on investtalk.com. It's a first-come, first-serve kind of thing. To save your time that day, just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
Now we are back with Invest Talk. We have about, 15 minutes left in the show to get your call in. So if you have a question, give us a call ASAP. Now there's some news that came out today that is disturbing me. And I think this happened with another bank, or maybe it was another entity. I forget what it was. But increasingly lax mortgage standards. And this time it's from Bank of America, the wonderful Bank of America. And they are now offering 3% down mortgages. Now, me as a financial advisor, as a market historian, as a economic expert, and as a licensed realtor, all rolled into one, this concerns me. Now, the new loan program is only aimed at low and moderate income borrowers for borrowing up to $417,000. Now, you still have to have a credit score of 660 or higher, but this is an issue because you shouldn't be buying a home if you only put 3% down. Markets can't sustain themselves when buyers are only putting 3% down. It means prices are too high. This is what that means. Every market's different, I understand. The Bay Area market's way more expensive than the Florida market. I get it. But this is disturbing. Now, most loans with less than 20% down are backed by the FHA, Federal Housing Administration. And those require monthly insurance premiums on top of the mortgage payment. And this is used to protect buyers. Okay. And the same thing here. Protect lenders, not buyers. So, you know, interest rates on these loans will obviously be determined by creditworthiness and score, etc. But they'll be cheaper than the FHA rate. Now, here's my issue. Is that Bank of America is issuing these mortgages, and they're doing what they did before, which was sell them off, meaning they don't have skin in the game. They're selling this off, not just to unwary investors, investors that, quote unquote, were educated back then before the housing crisis. They are now selling them to nonprofits. And the nonprofit is called self-help. And then the nonprofit is going to then sell them to Freddie Mac, another government agency. This is disturbing. You should not like this as a taxpayer. This is not the way the mortgage market is supposed to work. 3% down is not sustainable. We just went through this less than a decade ago. Now we're doing 3% mortgages again. It's just downright sad and disturbing. Now, if you're a younger listener and thinking long term, you should be open to a higher risk level in your retirement portfolio. But just because you should be open to it doesn't mean you are open to it. Risk is a foundational issue. And once you know how much risk you're willing to accept, you can build a portfolio that matches you. This is something we do with clients, listeners, all the time. Something we discussed over the weekend at our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference. You need to know what type of investor you are. And to take the first step to finding out, you can use our free award-winning risk analysis tool right there on investtalk.com.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, first name is Liana, L-I-A-N-A, and I'm calling you. I was just astoundedly, amazingly happy when I came across your station by accident, and I was mesmerized. I've been listening all day today since I came upon your station, which I'm just so happy about. But the question being this, my children, we are executors of an estate, and our grandchildren, ages 10 and 7, are inheriting some money, and I'd like to know how we should invest it. We have priority over the money, as far as you want to choose that word, forever, actually. There's no set time as to when they receive the money, but we'd like to certainly give the money to them at a certain time and like to invest it in a very, very, you know, safe investment. And wonder what you have to offer, or if you, you know, might give us some advice. And thank you very much. I just love your program. Thank you very, very much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for listening. It sounds like you have some important decisions to make. Now, you want to invest for your grandkids. They're young, so they can take some risk. However, you said you want something very safe. So that kind of doesn't jive very well. So you have to figure out what type of risk you want to take, whether it's a lot of risk, a little risk, medium amount of risk. It just depends on what you feel as the executor is appropriate for them. So if you want to give me a call at our office, 800-557-5461, or email me at jcline@kpfinancial.com, or go to our site and click on Contact Justin, and I can give you a little more color. Our Invest Talk anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer your questions with any money issues. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 6 minutes left in the show to get your call in and ask your question before we close for the day. So if you're going to do it right now. Now we'll talk a little bit about the TV industry. And technology has really changed the entire landscape of TV over the past 10 or 15 years. You have the rise of Netflix, Amazon Video, HBO, and unbundling of cable channels. And so we all know where we've come from, and we know we're on the brink of change. And things are changing. Even Disney says it with ESPN, etc. But where is that going? And so I want to go with three predictions for TV over the next 10 years. Number one is that we'll have millions of channels still out there. Maybe not millions, but thousands of channels still out there. And choice, a lot of choice. Now, still, if you want a lot of different channels like CNN, ESPN, etc., you have to buy it in a bundle. But that's clearly changing. People will be have access to the internet, and you'll be able to buy specific channels. And I still think we're going to go that way. There's been some hiccups. I think Apple will probably break that wide open at some point. I know the industry's fighting it, but it'll happen. Okay, so we all know where that's headed, and that's really going to disrupt the industry dramatically. And then number two, commercials are going to become antiquated. TV commercials are going to become kind of non-applicable, traditional ones anyway. You know, 30-second spots. You'll have more of the things like you see on YouTube, right? Maybe 15-second spots, 10-second spots. And they'll be very fragmented. But they'll be more targeted as well, which will be interesting, I think. You know, think of Facebook ads and the fact that they are very targeted to you. There's remarketing, etc. And that will leak into the online media channels as well, beyond just YouTube. So eventually, the commercials that you see for the Super Bowl, those type of commercials, will be gone. I think 10 years from now, there won't be anything like that. Okay, so I think that'll be very, very interesting. And there'll be services that are still reliant on ads, but the ads will be in a much different form. You'll see more product placement, things like that. Okay, and then finally, interactive TVs. You have Facebook, Google, Microsoft, all developing virtual reality. And so there'll be more interactivity with your TV. You know, think of Google Glass and wearable technologies. There's already technology where it can hear what you're listening to or watching on TV and automatically bring up coupons for that particular product, places to buy it. So smart TVs will become even smarter. It won't be just, oh, I'm streaming my Netflix or my Amazon Prime, right? It'll be much smarter than that. You know, think of smart TVs right now. It's really just taking your cable box and putting it within a TV and having features that will allow you to pull things off the internet. There's not a lot of input to your TV, right? You're inputting what you want to watch, but it doesn't really input what you're feeling. You're thinking about buying something. You want to learn more about something. It's not the interactive device, but it will be, so watch for that. Now our time is up. A reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com, clicking on Contact Justin. I'm Justin Klein, Senior Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.